Good evening. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters. My name is Veronica Entwistle, as a lot of you know, and every week I like to present people that I believe are making a difference in the collective of our species at this time, right now, the time of the Great Shift. So what we have tonight, we have a wonderful experience talking to Mark Allen, who's a publisher, but he's not just any old publisher, if there is such a thing. Mark Allen has some special information to share with you, some secrets that aren't really secrets, are they? So welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you, Veronica. Thanks for having me.
And you're the publisher of New World Library?
Yes,
Well, this is a really exciting business. Isn't it a business where you have all the people owning the business with you?
We all do profit sharing. Everybody, even the part-time guy in shipping, from top to bottom. So everyone acts and thinks like an owner.
Was that difficult to establish?
No, that was very easy to establish. When I first started the company, for the first few years, we weren't making any money. And I read an article just coincidentally on an in-flight magazine. And it was about this Swiss hotel that was losing all this money. They brought in this new manager. The manager said, look, if you hire me, here's the deal. First, a third of the profits will go back into renovating the hotel. And whatever's left over, we split half and half between employees and owners. And at first, the owners didn't like the concept. And he said, look, you're making nothing. You're losing money. And so they went along with it. The first year, employees got a bonus equal to about 2.5 weeks' pay. At the end of 7 years when the article was written, their bonus equaled about 8 months' pay, cash bonus at the end of the year.
And how do they figure that worked?
Pardon?
And, you know, how does that work? I mean, you think that there would be less profit, you know?
No, actually, there's more profit because every employee acts and thinks like an owner. And every employee really has the power, if they're empowered to do so, to either cut expenses or boost those sales or both. And I'm convinced, I can show people on paper, if you give half your profits to your employees, you'll make more than twice the profits.
Isn't that wonderful? So let's talk about manifesting. Isn't that kind of a part of the magic of manifesting, is when people are in their power, the power of their thinking and their goals?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I saw a great quote floating around from John Templeton. He said, the key to building wealth is to make others wealthy.
Huh.
And that's a very, very important key.
Huh. Well, let's talk about your latest book and then jump into how you got into all of this. Your latest book is called The Greatest Secret of All, Simple Steps to Abundance, Fulfillment, and a Life Well Lived. And I'm really enjoying it, but I have to say, Mark, this is really old material, isn't it?
It is old material. There's nothing new in it at all.
Isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, I start by quoting the Bhagavad Gita that was written over 5,000 years ago that says, we call these things secrets not because anybody's trying to keep them secret, but just because so few people are prepared to hear them today. This is all old stuff, and it's simple stuff. I need to understand things very simply in order for it to work in my life. So it's very simple. It's nothing you haven't heard before. And that becomes one of the biggest problems and obstacles with the material. Part of you just thinks, oh, I've heard this so often. I've heard it before. Yeah, big deal. And we kind of think it should be more complicated, or there should be something new in it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing new in it.
The truth is really ancient, isn't it?
The truth is ancient, mm-hmm. and a few people have understood it, and it has many aspects. And one aspect is the ability to create real abundance and prosperity in your life. That's a wonderful thing to be able to do.
Well, so you've actually done this by not having it and then taking these principles farther, have you not?
Right. I came from total poverty all through my 20s and early 30s. I was a struggling artist and spiritual seeker, and I finally, in my late 20s, I got fired from a string of jobs. I couldn't hold a job. And I woke up the day I turned 30. That's the day that changed my life. I woke up, I realized, I looked at my life in a whole broader way. I realized I wasn't a kid anymore. And it was no longer cool to be a struggling artist. I wanted to get on top of things. And that day, I paced up and down alone, and I came up with these four simple steps that are in The Greatest Secret of All, and in my previous books too, because it's the same thing I've been teaching for years. But it's very, very powerful. All it is really getting clear what you want in life, making a very clear goal, affirming that goal, and making a plan in one sheet of paper, making a plan and starting to work that plan, and then dealing with all the doubts and fears that inevitably arise with everyone, almost everyone.
But you seem to use the doubts and fears, don't you?
Yeah. We don't reject anything. The doubts and fears are all there for very good reasons and everything, but they can work against us. And if we allow them to, they can even overcome our dreams. So it's a matter of really getting clear. And for me, the simple little process I did the day I turned 30, the one I still teach today, I just took a sheet of paper and wrote ideal scene at the top and imagined 5 years had passed and everything had gone as well as I could imagine. What would my life look like? And this whole
up with?
This whole picture spilled out. I'd had no interest in business or even in money. I thought money was the root of all evil. In my 20s, I'd seen Brother Sun, Sister Moon 7 times, and I tried to live like St. Francis. Yeah, really, I tried to live like him, you know, not be concerned about money. Well, it wasn't working when I turned 30. So I, much to my own surprise, I wrote Ideal Scene and thought for a minute, and then I thought, I have a successful publishing company that cruises along and is very profitable and publishes my books. I hadn't written a book. And the books of others, and also my music is out there, and I have a big white house on a hill in Marin County, this beautiful place. I lived nearby, but I lived in a slum apartment in Oakland. And And then actually, even to make things more challenging, when I dared dream my ideal, I actually wrote down, and I have a life of ease, too. I don't work too hard. I only work when I feel like it, doing what I love.
You call yourself lazy throughout this book. That made me chuckle.
You know, I am. I've never been a morning person at all. Tonight I came home, first thing I did was take a nap. And I love taking naps, and I am lazy. And my dream, when I dared dream my ideal, was to just work when I felt like it and sleep or goof off or play music or do nothing when I felt like it.
Hmm.
My doubts and fears, of course, said impossible, never been done. But I got around them. I got around those doubts and fears eventually.
And how did you get around them?
Well, there were two things. One, the first one was just I remembered hearing about Buckminster Fuller in the 60s and 70s. Somebody told me that he always used to say that in his 20s, he came to a point where he decided to either commit suicide or look at his life as this unique experiment. Hmm. Unfortunately, he chose the experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And I latched onto that word the day of my 30th birthday when my doubts and fears said, impossible, you can't have all this dream, it's way too much. Mm-hmm. I said, and you can't do it with ease. It's hard, very few people succeed.
And it has to be hard to work.
It has
to,
yes, you must work hard to succeed. And here you don't want to work hard, you want to sleep in the mornings, you want to be lazy. Impossible. So I literally said to my doubts and fears out loud, walking up and down my little slum apartment, I said, look, let me try this as an experiment. They said, it won't work, won't work. I said, well, if it doesn't work, I won't be any worse off than I am now. I had no money. I had no family support. I had no job at the time. And so even my doubts and fears had to admit that it couldn't get too much worse. So I said, okay, don't bug me for a year or two and let me go for this dream of mine and do it in my own lazy way. And they sort of, they went along with it, but they felt it was hopeless.
But you didn't. You were doing an experiment, right?
An experiment, right. A tiny part of me thought it might work. I definitely had a lot of thoughts and feelings that it was hopeless and it wouldn't work and I would have to get realistic and get to work and get up early 5 days a week at least and, you know, work hard to succeed.
An iron
shirt
and wear a tie.
Right, wear a tie, put on a suit, right. But I found within a year it was beginning to work.
Wow.
I still had losses and financial problems at first because I didn't understand about financial controls, and I still had a lot of deep conflicting beliefs, including I believed I was just out of control with spending, and I didn't understand money. It was way beyond me, and I had no business experience. I had all these very limiting beliefs that definitely slowed my progress.
Were these emotional issues and self-esteem and that sort of thing?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I believed I wasn't capable, that it was so hard to succeed, so few people succeeded. But I fortunately, when I was 28, I wandered into this workshop. The other thing I did was I remembered this workshop I'd taken by a man named Ken Kies Jr., who had written a book called Handbook to Higher Consciousness in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. I remember that book.
Yeah, his wonderful contribution to humanity was what he called the core belief process. And on a Sunday afternoon on his weekend workshop, we spent the whole afternoon doing this process in groups of fours. We'd go around and do it for everyone. Hmm. And it's a simple little process that ends up with you very clearly stating in simple words your limiting belief. I believed I was out of control with money. I just didn't understand it. I was a fool with money.
Hmm.
Once you nail down that belief, you come up with an affirmation that directly contradicts it and counteracts it.
Can you put us a little bit through that process?
Sure. It's a very simple process. It's in the book, and it's just eight simple questions. It's not hard at all. The first question is just, what's the problem? You know, pick one, pick the biggest one, pick the one that's irritating you the most or frustrating you the most. In fact, when you are frustrated, that's the best time to do this process because you really become aware of what's going on internally. So just, what's the problem? That's what you ask yourself.
Okay.
Then you just say, what am I feeling physically? And you tune in your body. I remember I was real anxious in my stomach whenever I think of money. I was very tense in my shoulders, too. And just physically, what are you feeling? Then emotionally, what are you feeling? And you just nail the emotion. Don't describe it at this point. Just, okay, I'm frustrated. I'm anxious. There's fear underneath it, just as there is fear underneath all that stuff. You just nail the emotion. Then you say, what are you telling yourself? We used to say, what tapes are running in your head? What's that? What are those repetitive thoughts? I remember thinking, I'm a fool with money. I'm out of control. I just don't understand. It's beyond me. Maybe it's DNA. Some people have the DNA for money management. Others don't. I don't. That's why I'm broke all the time. That was going on in my head.
But those are the things you were thinking about, so you're kind of paying attention to that. Yeah.
Right, yeah, and you just become aware of what's going on. It's amazing in a way that we are so unaware often of what's going on internally in our bodies and even our minds, you know. So you really become aware of that train of thought, all those thoughts. And then
do you write them down?
You can write them down, but usually when we did it, it's not necessary because you just know them. The thoughts just spill out
right.
in a stream of thoughts. The only thing you need to write down are the affirmations at the end.
Okay.
So that's, I think, question four. Then five, you say, what? It's four or five. I might be confused with the numbers here, but then what is the worst that could happen? And that brings your fears to light. Well, I could go bankrupt totally. You say, then what's the worst that could happen? And I remember saying, well, let's see, I could die a drunken bum in the gutter slowly and painfully and no one would notice or care. And you see those worst fears, when you express them, you realize the chances of them coming true are minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Then you say, what's the best thing that could happen? I've done this hundreds of times with hundreds of people, and we all launch into our fears quite quickly and easily. And when we get to the best thing, we pause and say, let me think. Well, which shows me we haven't been focusing at all on the good possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
We've been letting our fears dominate our thinking. So then, yes, what's the best thing? What, in fact, what's your ideal scene in this situation? For me, I remember thinking, well, I can't budget. I'm not a type of person who can. I admire those who can. I can't. So the best thing would be we really get our distribution together and start collecting much more money and selling many more books and things and making some fat profits. So I get a bonus that just pays off all my debt.
That'd be great.
That was my ideal scene. Then you ask yourself, okay, what's preventing you from reaching that ideal scene? And that will shine light on those deep underlying beliefs. Well, I believe I'm a fool with money. I'm out of control. That's what I came up with. The simpler the words, the better. Once you nail that underlying belief, then you come up with an affirmation that totally contradicts it. So I literally came up with, I am sensible and in control of my finances.
You take your limiting belief and you turn it around.
Turn it around. Exactly, turn it around. And then when that same old feeling comes up and that same old thought with that same old belief drifts by, you go, cancel, cancel. You let it go, and you affirm the new thing. I'm sensible and in control of my finances. I'm creating total financial success in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way. A great phrase I read in an old book by Catherine Ponder, a Unity Church minister. looking back,
she,
I think
she used to be called the cheerleader of manifestation. Or
really, she's wonderful. She's and looking back, I think just repeating the phrase she gave us that in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way. That phrase alone, I think, overcame a huge amount of my doubts and fears, because that it sums up a lot of our doubts and fears. It ain't easy. It's hard. It's so hard to succeed. How can you affirm easy? It's hard. It ain't relaxed. It's stressful. It's stressful. Right. We get that constantly from the media. I saw an ad the other day that started out, "In your stressful day," and I literally, I turned it down, and I said to the TV screen, "I'm not having a stressful day. I'm having a very relaxed day. Don't tell me my day is stressful." But they want to stress you out more because they want to sell stuff to you.
Yes, that's right. That's really bizarre, but it's true.
It is. That book, The Hidden Persuaders, in the 50s, nailed it, and it's gotten worse, where we're assaulted by brilliant psychology telling us we're not enough. We don't have, we aren't enough in a way. We need something else. We need their product in order to be fulfilled and complete. We get that thousands of impressions a day.
It's very interesting, isn't it? But way you're talking about these core beliefs and affirmations, we wouldn't be so assaulted by all that if we were on top of what we're thinking and feeling, right?
That's true. That's very true.
We would just push back, would we not?
Yep. And to this day, when I feel a kind of limiting thought come along, I just go cancel, cancel, and I affirm its opposite. I affirm I am now creating the life of my dreams. It took me about 5 years, but I ended up creating exactly what my ideal scene was.
Really?
My dream life. And I have not worked too hard. I've never worked over usually 20 to 30 hours a week is what I find I work when I'm just following my natural energy.
And what is your work now? Your work is publishing.
Publishing, yeah. And writing and recording music, though that's not really work. That's play.
That's like a, not a hobby, but a creative drive, hey?
Right, right.
An artistic measure.
Yeah, I do that for fun, for real
and
fun.
And how many employees are there in New World Library?
In our company, there's 17. And for the level of sales we have, most companies doing our level of sales have about 30, 35 employees or more. That's one reason we're so very profitable. Our margins are much higher than the typical publishing. The percent of each dollar that goes to the bottom line is much higher than almost every other company I've ever heard of in publishing.
Well, tell me this, is do the people that work in your company, like is there a tendency in the company to keep this kind of attitude going, this belief?
Oh, definitely.
Reality.
Definitely. When it comes around to profit sharing time, I mean, it's I get the most wonderful, long, passionate hugs and thanks and appreciation. People love profit sharing. It really values them. And everyone who makes money knows it isn't just them. It's a whole team. It's a whole network of win-win partnerships. And that
and
is the way to...
do they work hard, Mark? Do
they work pretty hard. Yeah, I mean, we're flexible in terms of hours, and you know, if they need to take a break to handle something with family or whatever, they certainly do. But most of them are pretty darn committed to their jobs and do it very well. Recently, someone had to leave. Almost no one ever leaves. It's only because her husband got his dream job on the East Coast, and she said, "I have my dream job here," but both of their sets of parents were on the East Coast right near his job, so they decided, okay, that they'll go back there and have the parents take care of their kids. And but she left. It was like a wake. We had a wake. There were tears all around it. And then we started looking to replace her, and three of our people came to me and said, "We don't need to replace her. We each decided we can take a third of her responsibilities in addition to what we're doing," because they know with our good salaries and full benefits what it costs per person and they know if we can eliminate one job, that's a substantial amount right to the bottom line.
Wow. And so everybody joins in with each other.
Right.
I was wondering something. I asked a friend. We were having quite a conversation tonight, and she's a good friend who's been a publisher in the past, and she just moved to the Bay Area, so I've told her to call you. But in any case, and she's very conscious. But she was wondering, as we were talking about this book and creating and running the business and so on, how do you deal with personality things or even carrying this not to your work but to all kinds of other things? How do you deal with the emotional stuff that hits people like anger at family of origin and, you know, the things that happen through the Christmas break quite often, you know?
Right. I often say to people, when times are tough, that's when you really know if you're on a spiritual path that's worthwhile or if you're more psychologically inclined rather than spiritually. You can say, you know, that's when you know if the therapy you've done is beneficial or not. You know, I started the company with Shakti Gawain, and we used to do seminars together. And she loves when people come up with that kind of emotional problem or resistance. And she's always saying, okay, get it out, express it. Let's really explore that. Where did that come from? And she loves that kind of therapy. Mm-hmm. I am much more, maybe I'm less compassionate or something, but the path that works for me is to just say, let go of it. It's past. It's not here now. We only have this moment now. Mm-hmm. As Eckhart Tolle so brilliantly keeps telling us in The Power of Now, we only have this moment. The past is dead. It has no power to affect this moment. If we fully embrace this moment is a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Just being alive in this moment is a miracle. Focus on that miracle. You can only think one thing at a time, one thought. And we can choose our thoughts. Well, I choose to keep reminding myself that this moment is a wonderful, mysterious miracle of incredible creation.
Has it ever been hard for you? Have you ever been challenged by that?
Well, I've sure had my emotional challenges and things, but it's certainly gets better and better and better, and does not have the emotional weight it had in my early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
I had serious emotional problems in my early 20s when I look back on it. I would be depressed for periods, and I'd have this anxiety feeling something was wrong with me and something was wrong with the world, but I couldn't exactly pin down what it was. Now, looking back, I'm glad I had all that anxiety, because that drove me onto this spiritual path and the winding road I've taken. I would never have taken it if I wouldn't have been so neurotic.
Mm.
But definitely, life has gotten better and better, easier and easier. One great affirmation is just something I say a lot through the day, just every day in every way, I am getting better and better.
I love that one. That's a great one.
Yep, it is.
But your book here is absolutely full of wonderful, and probably for most people listening to this show, familiar quotes like, ask and you shall receive, seek and you will find.
Yes.
And love, and this is when my friend Deb and I were talking about it, love one another as I have loved you, love your neighbors as yourself, love your enemies.
Yes.
And you say that's the greatest secret of all. And that's where we started saying, how does he cope with some of the challenges on those things? And
mm-hmm.
you're saying it's by being in the moment. But sometimes emotionally it's very hard to just make that choice in the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. There are things you can do even physically to let emotions go. I do this, I don't know where I got this one, but you stand with your arms up and then you bring your hands down forcefully and just mm-hmm. cut off all cords of attachment to other people emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And you do it to each direction. And then you pray just for the descent of light from above and guidance to fill you in this moment.
Hmm. That's really a vehement movement, is it?
Yes, it's a pretty vehement moment of cutting off. Hmm. Cutting off your attachment to other people on an emotional level that's not working if there's frustration or anxiety involved. Just literally cut it off, and come back to this moment. I remember years ago thinking maybe half the time you have to be sort of on course and centered. And then I heard this analogy that I loved, and now everyone's heard it now, but a plane flying is off course over 95% of the time.
Are you kidding?
No, over 95%. But the pilot just keeps correcting and correcting. And when I heard that, I thought, that's the story of my life. By daring to write my ideal scene, I set a goal. I set a destination. And then with every bit of frustration, anxiety, doubt, fear, I got off course. But I kept coming back. I kept returning, kept remembering. Yes, there's nothing in
that. You're always correcting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, always correcting. We all know everything we need to know. We just forget over and over and over. We've all had beautiful peak experiences, certainly as children, but many of us as adults, too. What Abraham Maslow called those peak experiences, it can be a great piece of art, mm-hmm, or music or a sunset or a baby's eyes or whatever, just those moments when you realize the beauty and wonder of what is. Bam, we've had those experiences. We just need to keep remembering who we are.
Mm-hmm. So do you think, I'm thinking about this a lot actually, do you think that affirmations are a good way to get back into remembering who we are, to unhook ourselves from... A lot of us forget to do affirmations. I did tons of them in the 70s and 80s. I had them running on tapes, and I really did a lot.
Good. Yeah,
that's the secret, right?
Yep. Affirmations are brilliant. They work. They work. In fact, I often say it all works. Everything you do or can think of doing works. Prayer works. Affirmations, positive thinking, creative visualization, you know, a strategic business plan, strategic planning, it all works. The only problem is, I heard someone say it very succinctly. They said, the universe says yes to every thought. So when we affirm, I am now creating the life of our dreams, the universe says yes and starts showing us exactly what to do. Mm. It starts whispering the next step to take in our inner ear somehow. We are guided when we affirm. We become guided toward that path. But if our next thought is, oh, it's so hard to succeed, so few people succeed, the universe says, yes, it's hard for you with that thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
So every thought is right. Henry Ford nailed it. He said, if you think you can or if you think you can't, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
That's brilliant and profound when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the universe.
So if you judge yourself, or if you have low self-esteem, you're actually sending that message out too, right?
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes completely reinforced in your life experience. And you know, when I was a poverty case and thought I was a poverty case, I turned down so many opportunities. When I look back, I didn't even see these opportunities, or self-destructed, or whatever. And then I started affirming I was sensible and in control of my finances. I was creating total financial success. And then all these opportunities came along that were very easy to take.
Because it's about really steering the ship, steering your mind.
Yep, getting back on course.
Let's talk about the world, and I'd like to go back to what you're talking about. But
mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the world, the global economic situation, and the flagrant corruption we've all been dealing with. How do we deal with that?
Oh, boy. I remember in college studying Maslow's pyramid, Abraham Maslow's pyramid. Mm-hmm. And that's how I look at the world. In a way, he sums everything up where you can put humanity in a way, they're in a big pyramid where all those on the bottom are just struggling for food and shelter. And that totally dominates their consciousness.
Right.
Once they get food and shelter, they need security. Once they get that, they need maybe health care or some kind of therapy. Or then they can move up into the realms of education. Once they're free to get education and get it, they can move to the top of the pyramid to self-actualization, as he says it, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. So what's happening now with this shift, and there is a huge shift taking place.
There really is.
In the mass consciousness. Yes, there really is. It started in the 60s, and it's mm-hmm. gaining huge momentum now. The more and more people are reaching that top and becoming self-actualized, mm-hmm. and then realizing we have the power now. We have the capability and resources to help everyone globally move up that pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
Buckminster Fuller said this over 40 years ago. He said, we have the technology and resources to feed and house and give health care to and educate everyone on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
We have that capability, and we're just beginning to
and
do
it. We're affirming that we can do that.
We can do it, yes.
Some of us, we can actually make that wave go through the collective. Can we?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And everyone can do something. If you think you have no time or no money to support anything, you can at least pick up the garbage on, you know, the way to the bus stop or something. You can do something to make the world a better place.
I know somewhere in here you've got I can't find it right now, but anyway, humanity is a much more powerful force than we're aware of. And this is
yes.
what we're trying to learn right now with this book, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
That each of us is amazingly powerful.
We are. We are. We do have incredible potential, every one of us.
Mm-hmm. What did your folks think when you turned yourself around at 30? What did they think?
They were amazed. My dad's first words when I called him when I was 30 and said, I'm going to start a company. His first words were, 80% of new startups fail in their first 2 years.
Great.
And I realized, oh, okay, he's one of the guys I cannot share my dreams with because he'll shoot him down.
Right.
And I found I had several friends like that weren't at all supportive. And I think a person is lucky if you have one real supportive friend.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Or ideally some kind of support group. If you can go to a support group.
Remember there's an old line, too, that says, be careful who you share your dreams with?
Yes, really, because our dreams at first, they're very vulnerable. They're ephemeral. They're just thoughts, dreams. They can easily be overwhelmed by the wrong comment at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm, dashed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then, that happens to us a lot, but it's those people that get back on course. Get back on a horse when they've fallen off, if you will, or whatever. It's the people. You've seen so many people create great success, like Oprah, or like so many people that were born with such tremendous odds against them. But they had an inner strength that just wouldn't take no for an answer and would keep bouncing back after every time they were knocked down.
And have you been knocked down since you started doing all this?
Well, I've had a few doozies of some failures. Every successful person Oh, yeah. Now that I've gotten successful, I mean, I hang out with other successful people some of the time. And one of our favorite things to do is tell about our just total failures or the complete stupidity of our first attempts at things.
Oh, that's funny.
Or, things we didn't understand or...
Because we all hear the story about how Disney went bankrupt 7 times and nobody thought he had a product worth selling.
Yeah, there you go. And that's wonderful to hear. That's very inspiring.
Yeah. Well, so I want to jump back through because you use a lot of quotes in here, which I've already mentioned, and it is so wonderful. You even say in the introduction that if you don't have time to read the book, flip through and read the quotes, that's enough, right?
Yep, yep.
But one of the areas, let me see here, one of the areas that you talk about a lot is learning to love each other, and you phrase that in so many different ways, wonderful quotes. Can you talk a little bit about that? Has that been a challenge, or is that an affirmation that needs to be practiced?
Well, when I get into the second part of the book, the first part then is learning how to manifest and create this life of our dreams and the law of attraction and all this good stuff in very simple terms. Mm-hmm. But then in the second half, I say, it's wonderful to know this stuff, but it's not the most important thing in life whatsoever. I remember when I first started writing the book, the ideas just kept coming after I saw the movie The Secret. And then a few nights after that, I saw a bio on TV of J. Paul Getty. And he was the richest man in the world when I was a kid in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the most miserable people on the world. He had a miserable life. He had five sons. He never held his own sons. He would marry these beautiful women and flee from them as soon as they were pregnant, and had all these divorces and just a miserable life. And he didn't understand the simplest thing about a life well lived.
But it's interesting that he would be manifesting.
He understood manifestation, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Though he did not understand the life of ease, he was a total workaholic from early morning to late at night. Mm-hmm. Work. And he made a tremendous amount of money, and he was miserable. Watching, my whole family watched his bio, and at the end, I remember my kid, he was about maybe 10 years old then. He just came and gave my wife a huge hug. He didn't say a word. He just silently just hugged her. And in his hug, I know exactly what he meant to say. It was, I love you, and that's so important, and that's so much more important than any amount of money we have, any of the stuff around us. And so that bio, it really spurred the book and made me walk around pondering a lot what's really important in life. And of course, it's something that I encourage everyone to put in their own words and find in their own way, but it's just obvious that the most important thing in life is to love yourself and others.
And were you married at 30? You weren't, were you?
Not at 30, no.
So did you have that affirmation in there to have a partner?
You know, that was sort of a back burner thing. I wasn't sure, even. I did have a couple real, you know, loving partnerships, and then I was alone for a while. And for 7 years in my 40s, I was alone, and I wondered, is this my path, to be alone? And I say to everyone, there's advantages and disadvantages in every path, you know. And if you're alone, enjoy it, because there's a lot of good in it. And if you're in relationship,
you're alone. I mean, I agree with you, except that, you know, when we're doing manifestation, you go, what was missing for you, or was anything missing? Is this part of our dharma?
Yes, exactly. It was part of my dharma. I guess I needed to explore that, because I always had been in a warm, supportive relationship. And I guess I just wanted to be alone for a while. I needed to be alone for a while. And so I was. And then without my consciously affirming it or anything, I just met somebody, and we ended up married and with a boy. I had a son when I was 50, so I'm a late bloomer.
Oh, wow.
As a family man.
So you're living happily ever after. But it's really interesting, isn't it? Because you're talking about manifestation, and you're covering a lot of different things, like the wealth, but doing a style of work that suits you,
mm-hmm.
and bringing the love in. But it sounds like you had to bring in, now I don't know if I'm reading into this, but it seems like you had to bring in the love of yourself to do the manifestation.
Yes, I did.
Something John Paul Getty didn't know yet.
No, it was sad. I think I had pretty poor self-esteem in my 20s, if you'd want to put it that way. I had doubts about my abilities, for sure, and I'd had two older brothers, and I often say if you can survive older brothers, you know, it's amazing I had any self-esteem left. And but over the years, I finally realized every one of us is a creative genius in our own unique way. Mm-hmm. And that includes me. I have a special gift to give to the world, and so do you, and so does everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really fun to...
But are you raising your son that way? See, I think what's really interesting is this is such brilliant information, even though we've already said it isn't really new. It's thousands of years old.
Mm-hmm.
But your presentation is very succinct, easy to absorb, but very deep. And I'm just thinking, does your young one, I think, does your young one grok all this? Is he?
I think so, yes. I think he gets it. I mean, he's overhearing me constantly talking to other people saying, I don't like idle, you know, party chatter. And so even at a party or whatever, when I meet someone, I'll say, you know, okay, what are you passionate about doing? If you could do anything, what would it be?
Oh, that's a fun thing to do at a party, yeah.
Yes, yes.
And how do people respond?
Oh, most of them really enjoy launching into it. And sometimes I'll get just solid walls of resistance. And I'll usually try to throw in something to give them something to think about.
Hmm.
You know, I'll meet people that are just beaten down and, you know, they've lost their job, they tried it on their own, it didn't work, it's just so hard, they're struggling. And when I say, if you could do anything, what would it be? They just say, you know, well, I tried that, it didn't work. It's,
mm-hmm.
I have to get real. I can't just live out some fantasy. I don't get any support from that. And so if the doubts and fears are that powerful, it's a challenge for me to come up with something that gets to them, but I try. And
so what do you say?
Oh, sometimes...
That's actually really interesting, actually.
I mean, sometimes I'll just give them one of my books, if they're at all open to that,
mm-hmm.
or I'll throw some quote at them. I, in my 20s and early 30s, there were a few books I took quotes from and just put all over my wall, the inspiring quotes. Like one was As You Think by James Allen. The original is As a Man Thinketh.
Right.
That, for years, until I got to The Power of Now, for years I said that was the best book I ever read. And I would literally put big quotes on my wall, like, you will become as great as your dominant aspiration. If you cherish a vision, a lofty ideal in your heart, you will realize it. I just love the authority that he speaks mm-hmm. with and writes with. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I'll pop up with something like that for a person. Or I'll
now,
say...
What do they do? Does anybody go, you're driving me crazy?
Oh, yeah, sometimes, mm-hmm. sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I say, good, good. Because you're crazy thinking that you're not capable.
Right.
And so... It's
well,
good.
We're sort of shielded from our own power so much of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, going back to my friend Deb's question, is we shrink ourselves because of human interactions, like in family difficulties and so on, don't we? Sibling stuff and
social
encounters. We get smaller.
We
in
do.
Our anger, in our frustration, in our defense.
Mm-hmm. And it's all based on a fear, which is unfounded. So many people, they're so afraid to fail. They're afraid to speak in front of a crowd. They have all these fears. Well, those fears are running their lives. And every successful person will say, don't fear failure. Go for it. And if you fail, celebrate it and go on. You just, you know, a failure doesn't have to stop you. It's just another stepping stone along the way.
What if somebody affronts you? Do you get angry back to them so that you're expressing your own power, or do we back up and just send them love and pray for it and try to patch our own damage? What do we do?
I don't get angry with anybody. I find I just don't go there. No, I just I try to give them something. A little bit of hope, maybe, or I try to encourage them. Or so many of us, we don't even realize our own gifts because they're just so natural and easy to us. Mm-hmm. We sort of take them for granted. Mm-hmm. And when we do get frustrated, we're looking at that empty side of the glass, and we forget our own strengths and gifts. Yeah, I really do believe firmly life is this wonderful chalice, mm-hmm. and the chalice is half full, mm-hmm. you know, and of course, because it's a big chalice, you don't fill it all the way up with something, you know, you just fill it half full. And so many of us have gotten to this very strange place when you think about it, where we're whining about what's not right and focusing on what's not there and completely forgetting just the wonder of being alive in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Just having this day and having this life is an amazing gift and an opportunity for us.
And are you teaching all of this? I'm going to have to wrap this up, which I'm sorry about, but are you going to tell us about classes that you're giving or what it is you're doing with this wonderful information and about the book?
Yes, thank you much. Yes, I am. I continue to write books. My last is The Greatest Secret of All. And I do a free monthly teleconference the first Wednesday of every month. So I'll do one tomorrow night, actually. And the first Wednesday of every month, I do a totally free teleconference, and I try to give away the essence of what I know every time I talk, mm-hmm. including interviews. Like, I tried here to give away the essence of what I know.
I enjoyed this interview very much.
Thank you.
Well, I want to say this about you. You make me feel like it can be a creation where, as we speak, we're always speaking an affirmation, and that could build up the strength, you know, that gives
yes.
us in adversity. And you really seem to embody that. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah. I often tell people, don't underestimate the power of affirmations. What are our limited beliefs? They're just phrases we heard, often with a real emotion behind them.
Right.
We heard life is a struggle, it's so hard to succeed, money doesn't grow on trees. They're just phrases we heard.
Right.
So affirmations...
Or who do you think you are?
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm. That's another one, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if people wanted to tune into your webinar, is it?
Yes, yes, I do these teleconferences, free ones the first Wednesday of every month, and then I do an ongoing series of them that have really been fun to do and rewarding, and they can get information at markallen.com, MARCALLEN.com.
Great, and so they can tune in there and sign up for your class, can they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Or can we? I don't know if I'll
yes.
have time, but I think about it.
Yes, yes, yes.
And do you have any more books coming out?
I've got another book I'm working on. I always am. A whole course, mm-hmm. A Course in Magic, which I'm doing a teleseminar of starting next month.
Is it on Skype? Is it prestidigitation?
We're getting... I don't even know what that word is. But
it means... Slate of hand, moving your fingers really.
Oh, no, it's not. It's real magic, creating something out of nothing.
Yay.
Yes, it's good stuff. And then I've also just got my whole Success with Ease course will be very soon available as 12 MP3 downloads.
Great.
And that was an entire lengthy course we did.
Yay. Well, that's wonderful to look into. So that's markallen.com, and people can catch up with you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I've so much enjoyed our time together, and I like this book. I'm working it through myself. Mine's
great.
All dog-eared.
Wonderful.
All right.
Always love to hear that.
And thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you, Veronica.
Happy New Year.
You too.
So this is Veronica Entwistle saying that was our guest for tonight was Mark Allen. He is making a difference. Think about the company where his people own the company and everybody gets greater rewards out of the work they do. And also remember to speak and think in affirmations. Get hold of his book, The Greatest Secret of All. It's just full of tidbits on how to change. He kept it really simple on purpose, how to change your way of thinking. Anyway, Happy New Year to everyone. This is the time of the shift, and we all know that we have to steer our minds, keep your hands on the steering wheel of our minds to get through this shift and move ourselves out of some of the old potholes of believing negative things about ourselves or even the world and change and find the power of self. So tune in on Thursday night for Radiance by Design. It's a call-in show. It's all about you. I'll teach you meditations. And, of course, I'm an intuitive, and I'll answer your questions. And we follow that with Jackie Salvitti and her wonderful team, ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. I still look forward to talking to you Thursday night at 7 o'clock on BBS. And then I have a guest coming up the week after, but it's a surprise guest. So this is Veronica Entwistle saying if you'd like to talk to me for feedback on these shows or for a session or whatever, Veronica@VeronicaEntwistle.com, no H in Entwistle. And again, look up markallen.com, M-A-R-C-Allen, A-L-L-E-N.com for more information on how he uses the great secrets. Good night, everyone. Many, many blessings.